speaker is Andrea Cavaglia from University of Turin, and he will speak about quantum spectral curve for ADS3 CFT2.
Okay, it's on, perfect. Okay, thank you very much. I would like to start by, should I make the screen bigger? Is it not full screen? Thank you. So I'll start by thanking the organizers for getting us all together in this very nice conference and giving me the opportunity to speak. So I will talk about a proposal for a quantum spectral curve for this ADS3 CFT2 duality. And so this is a proposal that we made in a work together with Kolea, Bogdan, and Alessandro. And also exactly at the same time, the same proposal was made by Simon and Dima. And of course, we should test it extensively. But I will discuss about the preliminary evidence that we have that it may be correct, and also about the logic of how we obtained it. That it, in this case, we didn't derive it from TBA, but we tried a sort of bootstrap type approach to find the different types of quantum spectral curves. And maybe this approach could be useful to derive it for further models. So, and I want to say my talk will be very much inspired by ongoing works and discussions with all these very nice people, and also ongoing work which also involves Paul. And I will say more about this later. So, So the duality we're studying is one of the first holographic setups to be introduced. So on one side, we have a string theory on this ADS3 cross S3 cross T4 background with purely Ramon-Ramon flux. And the dual side, as Alessandro said, is quite mysterious. So abstractly, this is defined in string theory by considering the theory that lives on the D1, D5 system of brains. And this theory is a sort of superconformal QCD in two dimensions. But to have the dual CFT, which should flow to the IR. So contrary to ABGM and N=4 superior Mill theory, this theory is not conformal. And in the IR, we find some mysterious strongly coupled interacting CFT that we would like to study. And so there are not many techniques available. In particular, worksheet CFT techniques in this case are extremely hard to use, contrary to the case of pure NSNS flux that was recently essentially solved using this type of techniques. So the best bet to study this theory is integrability. So there is a lot of evidence that together with other ADS3 CFT2 dualities, that this one has the same type of integrability on the worksheet that we know in N=4 and ABGM theory. And so we're in the same conceptual framework, but with this significant new feature and complication, that's the presence of massless modes in the worksheet theory. So our proposal is for the quantum spectral curve that we should give the solution for the full planar spectrum at finite coupling, where by coupling, essentially, I mean alpha prime here. But I'll call it just a Toft coupling. So this would be the third example of quantum spectral curve arising in this field. So we had one for N=4, one for ABGM. And so roughly, a way to describe it is that the quantum spectral curve is a sort of problem, a complex analysis problem, which defines some set of Q functions. So they, in particular, they will have some branch points, which is where the Toft coupling enters the game in the position of the branch points. And they're functions of a parameter called the spectral parameter. And the idea is that this problem will have a discrete set of solutions. Each solution corresponds to a state in the spectrum, and from this set of Q functions in this solution, we can extract the scaling dimension of the state. So it was observed and experienced in these previous cases that this mathematical structure is quite rigid. For example, it was possible to find a variation by tweaking it a bit that describes the cusp anomalous dimension in n equals 4 at the spectrum on a cusp-Wilson line. And this is a bit of an inspiration for our work, because also in this case, this result was not found directly by deriving it from TBA, but just taking some information from TBA. But besides, we might be interested to see what types of quantum spectral curves can exist, but I want to emphasize that it's something that is hugely useful in practice. So we can say, I think that in n equals 4 and ABGM, we can now answer almost any question on the spectrum. So almost because it's very hard to ask questions about like density of states or the behavior for asymptotically large quantum numbers. But any question that we can ask by studying a spectrum state by state can essentially be answered with arbitrary detail. So and this is just an example that some applications, we can solve the equations numerically, and essentially there are methods to solve them with essentially arbitrary precision. And this is just, for example, one can plot the spectrum, and this is an example of the spectrum on a Wilson line in n equals 4. And there are very nice and powerful methods to solve them analytically in various limits, such as at weak Toft coupling. And so I plan to have this comment on what sort of numbers can appear. And so the quantum spectral curve gives very precise structural predictions. For example, in n equals 4, there should be only, in this weak coupling expansion, multiple Riemann zeta values. In ABGM, multiple Riemann zeta values with alternating signs. And I don't have a concrete things to say today about AGS3, but I will say this quantum spectral curve looks more complicated, so it looks likely that these would be more complicated numbers. But of course, connecting to the comment that was made yesterday, we should look if there is some tension with prediction from Feynman integrals, we should see how this is resolved. But so assuming a quantum spectral curve is correct, it's passed many tests, it gives very powerful and deep predictions. Sorry? Yeah, that's like an experimental finding, right? I think like this is the theorem that this is a class, an experimental finding, it's an even more restricted class. And then, okay, just as an extra motivation, there are recent directions where the quantum spectral curve is connected to computation beyond the spectrum, trying to solve a non-trivial correlation functions in a planar limit. And so we heard yesterday about this very nice new proposal of combining the hexagons with the exact spectral equations to compute OP coefficients. There is also this idea that so far it's much less developed, but there is evidence from various corners that Q functions are themselves building blocks to build correlation functions through separation of variables. And also there is this recent approach of trying to take spectral data, use them as an input in the conformal bootstrap. And this gives already some very accurate predictions for some OP coefficients of short operators. You can see more about this in a poster by Julius. Okay, so, but now with this motivation, let me come to ADS3. And so there are two possible ways. So there is a systematic way that was described by Alessandro already. And so it's in a way, it's the proper way to derive the quantum spectral curve would be to, as was done in the previous cases. So it's this very well-established idea that first we understand the integrable model on a very large worksheet, which is a limit of large quantum numbers. In this large worksheet, we understand the dynamics with the dispersion relation and the worksheet S metrics. And then we make this worksheet periodic. Then the spectrum is described by asymptotic beta ansatz. And then the thermodynamic beta ansatz is a way to make this volume finally finite. And so here is where we are now in ADS3, as Alessandro described. And then there should be some quite complicated chain of simplifications that leads us from the integral equations of the TBA to functional relations and the quantum spectral curve. So what we tried in this work is to fix the quantum spectral curve from self-consistency requirement. And these two types of assumptions and input, which are assumptions about, so the input about the symmetry of the system and assumptions about analyticity of the Q functions. I will describe these more. But what I want to say is that, so we use essentially almost no input from the microscopic realization of the system. In particular, we don't use input about the worksheet S matrix. And a bit like reverting the logic, we can reproduce at the end the worksheet S matrix. I will say, concretely, I will talk about the massive S matrix and use this as a cross check. And while the S matrix bootstrap approach in principle suffers from this ambiguity of CDD factors, which are an ambiguity that's at the beginning of this approach. So here we'll see that the quantum spectral curve has a prediction about what should be the right CDD factor. So and I will describe how we match this most recent proposal for the dressing phases. So what are these? So these are two types of assumptions. So the symmetry from the input from the symmetry, so it's a super conformal group of symmetries of the duality. This should become a global symmetry of the integrable system. And this should go in a totally model independent way into the form of these functional relations satisfied by the Q functions, which are called Q system. So I apologize, I forgot to put references here. But so we heard about Q systems in Dima's talk, and in particular for some algebras and superalgebras, it's completely understood what should be this structure, in particular for the A type ones, such as was the case of ADS5. In ADS4, some QQ relations were reconstructed a posteriori. So ADS3 is. So it's in the same class as ADS5. So in a way, it's two copies of a smaller rank version of ADS5. So from the point of the Q system, it's all completely understood. The hard part is talking about analyticity. So what are our assumptions? There is a very natural one, is that the charges of the system should appear in the asymptotics at large values of the spectral parameter of these Q functions. This essentially comes from the fact that this quantum spectral curve should match what is called the classical spectral curve, which is the mathematical structure that describes the classical solutions of the equations of motion of the string in a classical limit. And then to say the other assumption with the slogan is that these Q functions should have no singularities. The only singularities that are allowed are sort of kinematical singularities that don't depend on the states, but only on the definition of the model. And of course, here, what are the rules? While we can essentially derive the rules for spin chains or the fishnet model for models which are as hard as this, or like nonlinear sigma models, we don't know the rules a priori. So what we did in practice, so based on the fact that these analytic properties were similar in ADS5 and ADS4, we'll essentially try to be as close as possible to these two previous cases. So essentially what we try to do, it's an assumption of minimality. We are trying to build two small copies of ADS5 and make them talk in some way. So if there is a model that satisfies these minimal assumptions, it should be this model, because it's the one that at the level of the S-metric is most closely related to the previous one. So now I'll say concretely more in detail what are our assumptions. But I want to make a comment that we do not input any special feature that is related to the massless modes. So of course, this is a very special feature of this model that was absent before. But we think there was, mathematically, we didn't see any natural place where this information should go. And so our working assumption is that they are present in this curve that we propose, and they should be somehow an emergent feature that will appear when we go towards this large volume limit. Okay, so here, let me just show what are these functional relations coming entirely from symmetry. So the symmetry tells us that the number of Q functions should be 16 plus 16 associated to these two copies of the algebra. And I will denote one copy with a dot on the indices and the other one without dot. And for each copy, we have some Q functions that satisfy relations such as those shown here. So the details are not important, but this plus and minus denotes just some shifts in the spectral parameters, and the indices are fused in a certain way. And we make another assumption that is essentially the ones that are at the extremes of this fusion of Q functions should be one. So you can see this as another assumption of minimality. So in principle, this could be where there could be some wiggle room in the construction, but we think, at the moment, we think that this does the job. And so a feature of these relations is that, as already was described by Dima, they imply beta equations. But these, so here, these Q functions are not polynomials. They will be complicated functions. So these are abstract beta equations. So whenever one functions have zeros, on these zeros, there are these types of relations, which can be derived in a simple way. For example, from this QQ relation, if you sit at the zero of Q1, you get zero on the right-hand side, and you see that this ratio should be one. So this exact equation should match the asymptotic beta ansatz when we take this appropriate large volume limit. And we'll see that this happens. So now let me say concretely what are our assumptions about analyticity. And this come literally from translating what we know about ADS5. So from this expected correspondence with the classical spectral curve, we can say that some Q functions in the classical limit parameterize motion on ADS3 or on S3. And it was noticed that associated to these two types of functions, which are roughly, we're talking about the ones at the extremes of the Dynkin diagram. So in this case, there would be half of the Q functions. So these Q functions should have, on some Riemann sheets, some very simple analytic structure, so with only one cut. But these two types of functions have two cuts of different types. So the ones associated to the compact part of target space have a short cut, and the ones associated with a non-compact part have a long cut. And the positions of the cut is parameterized by the Toft coupling through some parameter h. So I will not specify what is h, but it should be a function of the Toft coupling. Okay, and now I'm ready to show you what is the proposal is. So the point is that between these two types of axioms about symmetry and analyticity, there is some tension. And essentially, we propose a simple way to resolve this tension. And I want to show you the proposal just with some pictures, essentially. So it's all contained in this slide. So one can derive some more equations from here, but this is just to show that It's a very minimal proposal, which ensures the compatibility of these two types of axioms. One can also axiomatize it more, like Dima and Simon did, and in their case, given some precise set of rules, they could do a classification, and they found, as one of the cases in this classification of possibilities, the same proposal that we make. So the idea of this tension is that once we say that some of the Q functions, the one I labeled as P, should have a shortcut, then this QQ relation will try to essentially replicate this structure. And so the QQ relation then will predict that the other Q function should have an infinite ladder of cuts. And we can actually have two bases. One, if we say that we start applying the QQ relation in the upper half plane, we find an infinite ladder of cuts in the going down. And these are denoted with this arrow going down. Or another basis, if we start applying QQ relations here, we'll find an infinite ladder of cuts going up. But this should be compatible with this idea that on some Riemann sheet, they should have these long cuts. And the way to make it compatible is we propose we should glue these sheets together, which forces us to say what happens when we go inside the cut. The idea is we go inside this cut and we come back on another sheet. But in this gluing of sheets, we also exchange these two wings of the system. So this is the only way that these two wings talk to each other. Otherwise, they would be completely disconnected. So in equations, this is written like this, where gamma denotes the analytic continuation as shown inside the cut. And this G, it's a matrix, which should be a matrix of constants, not to change this analytic structure. And okay, we know a bit more about the structure of these Gs. We think they are off-diagonal matrices, but okay, it's not so important. So in pictures, essentially, that's it. So now I want to describe some features of this new construction and why it's actually different from the previous cases. And this has to do with this Riemann surface of where the Q functions live. So also in the other cases, it was very complicated. So we've seen there are infinitely many branch points. And also there are infinitely many Riemann sheets. So the current understanding in all of these cases is that if you go inside any cut, you get to a new sheet. And there are never cycles. So the new feature is about the nature of the branch points. So to discuss this, let me show some equations. So these are all equations that can be derived from this previous, from what I showed in pictures, essentially. So this equation is an equation that glues together Q functions with these ladders of cuts in two different directions. So there's two different bases. There is also an equation through which you can glue together Q functions with the ladder of cuts all in the same direction. And this now is not through a constant matrix, but through this matrix called omega, which is a periodic matrix. So it can be constructed explicitly out of Q functions, essentially. One can also derive what happens if we go inside the branch point of omega. It's given by this equation. And if we stare at it, it tells us that there is some special combination, which I denoted as U, which is a matrix where the cut on the real axis is absent. So it will have all the other cuts, but not on the real axis. And if we exchange the role of the two wings, I can define in the same way some matrix U dot. So now I can use these to study what happens if I go around the cut many times. So if I go around the cut of Q once, so this brings me to a Q on the other wing related by one by U. If I go twice, I find U, and then for the second time, I find U dot. And if I go around n times, I get, in general, this product. And So in ADS5, there will be some algebraic relations in the system that essentially tell you that these cuts are quadratic. So this chain stops after two times. But here there are no such constraints. And so what we expect is that the monodromy is infinite around any branch point. In fact, if we try to force the quadratic nature of the cuts, we found, as was shown by Simon and Dima, that this collapses the system. It will collapse these two algebras to just one, and this will become essentially the Hubbard model. So this is a feature that we did not input, that these cuts are no longer quadratic. We didn't expect it, and in fact, at the beginning, we were really reluctant to accept it. It's also a feature that makes solving the equations much harder than previous cases. But we think it's a signature of the presence of massless modes in the system. So this is one way where this new feature appears. And so we need to learn how to make friends with it. And what I want to describe is now trying to do something with these new equations. So I will describe this large volume solution and how this allows to reproduce the worksheet S matrix in the massive sector. And at the end, describes some preliminary numerics. So here it will be preliminary results. Don't expect still a plot as nice as the one at the beginning, but it will be evidence that this system has non-trivial solutions and that the equation can work. We have some heuristics. You can think that massless, well, this is really extremely heuristic, but massless modes are, normally we have these cuts periodized by this shift, which is related to the mass. And if you take a massless limit, heuristically you can imagine a ladder of cuts that collapses, and you get a superposition of many quadratic cuts that create some more complicated cuts. Another way of thinking is just that we know there is something strange in this system, which are these massless modes, and this is also something strange. Sorry, how much time do I still have? Eighteen, okay, thank you. All right, so we would like to describe this large volume limit, but one word of caution is that it doesn't work in the same way that we are used to in ADS5 and ADS4. So this limit is defined by taking very large value of a charge on the sphere, which represents the volume, with delta scaling in the same way, and keeping the coupling fixed. And normally we're used to the idea that this is described by the ABA, up to exponentially small corrections. So here, because there are massless modes, we can have virtual massless particles correcting the result. So the ABA is supposed to describe just a tiny region, and at 1 over j already we need the contribution from wrapping. But we will see that formally it still works to take this limit at the level of the QSC, and we will reproduce this massive ABA in the sector with no massless particles in the direct channel. We have some ideas about how to see the emergence also of the massless equations, but in this case, I think we understand this less and the limit is a bit more singular, so I will not discuss this today. Okay, so the idea of how to take this limit is that worked in the other cases, is that in this limit, some Q functions will become small or large. And we can read which ones become small or large by looking at how the charges enter into their asymptotics. So once we assume that some are small, they will drop out of these QQ relations. And this implies some simplifications, where essentially we find some discontinuity equations that are exactly solvable. So in this limit, we can find explicitly what are the Q functions. And little by little in these solutions, we see that some building blocks appears, which turn out to be S-matrix elements. And plugging this exact solution inside these exact beta equations that I showed before, one reproduces the ABA. So this is the logic. And to present what happens, so I want to describe a bit more the new non-trivial part, which is related to addressing phases. So I'll start a bit midway, because the beginning of this derivation would be exactly the same as in ADS5. So with the same type of argument, one can fix some of the Q functions in this limit. So in here, I'll just show what one finds. So in this solution, these Q functions are parametrized by the value of their zeros on their first Riemann sheet. So these are kind of parameters in the solution. And eventually, they will play the role of beta roots. And there are also some functions that appear in this solution, which such as this one, which essentially in their belly, they contain already the dressing phase of ADS5, the Beiser-Ted and Staudacher dressing phase. So this appears pretty quickly. One comment I want to make is that there are some proportionality factors here. So in this way, to solve it, it's a bit hard to fix them because some Q functions, in the end, we compute them by solving this type of equations, which come from QQ relations. So we'll have something for the ratio, and then we need to solve it knowing the analytic properties of Q. So it's a bit hard to find these factors. And I will just carry them around because they'll play some role later. We think there is a way to fix them, but just we didn't compute them precisely. So up to this point, everything was like in ADS5. The new thing is when we try to use this equation for going inside the cut. So, I mean, it's not, we would do this also in ADS5, but here it would be different. So this is, the first one is one of the exact equations that we have for going inside the cut. And now in this ABA limit, this piece that appears is something that was shown on the previous slide, something that we already know. And it becomes a relation between these two Q functions. So let's make an ansatz for them. So here I'm showing a very generic ansatz. And it's very generic because here I'm stripping some explicit factors just for convenience, but I'm putting here some functions A and A dot, which I assume to be completely general. The only thing that we know from the quantum spectral curve is that they should be functions with constant asymptotics at infinity and with only one shortcut on the first Riemann sheet, and no zeros. So this is one shortcut because this one appears in P functions. These are the one with the one shortcut. And through the Q system, this other one will also appear in a P function in the other wing. So it has to have the same properties. So now if we use this first equation, you get these two relations here. So the second one comes from a similar argument for the other wing. So we get these two relations for these functions. So okay, we can look at them and we immediately realize that this implies that the cut of these A and A dot functions cannot be quadratic. So far in the other functions, all the cuts were kind of standard quadratic ones. And it cannot be because, well, otherwise we could derive the second equation for the first, from the first, just by undoing this continuation in the other direction. But this is not compatible with the form of the right-hand sides of the equation. So we see the cut cannot be quadratic in this case. And but okay, so we can solve these functions. So to find a precise solution, I need also to know what's the proportionality factor, because everything else is a product over these roots. Let me assume also that the proportionality factor takes the form of a product over the root. And with this assumption, we can find well. Let's just carry these constants with us for a moment. So the solution can be written as a product where a building block has this function sigma 1 and sigma tilde 1, and they should satisfy these two relations here. So now it's not difficult to verify that these two relations imply the crossing equations that Alessandro showed. If we define some dressing phases through these type of ratios. And this is valid for any value of these C1 and C2 functions, which are functions of this second spectator variable, which doesn't go inside the cut, and they come from these constants up here. So let's take a moment to recap what was done. So we are finding this solution in a large volume limit, and we find a solution that is parameterized by these roots and by this function sigma 1 and sigma tilde 1. Once we plug this into the exact beta equations, we reproduce the ABA in the massive sector where the role of the exact dressing phases is played by these ratios. And so now, so I just showed that these functions will satisfy crossing, but we should solve the equations and see what solutions we get. And let's look at, for example, at the ratio of these dressing phases, which is the one that was different in the new proposal as compared to the old one. So for the ratio, if I define it as rho, and it satisfies this equation, where here I'm still carrying around this k of v, which is depends on these constants that essentially so far we've been lazy and we have not really computed. So we can solve these equations. So it's not hard to see that with the assumptions on analyticity coming from the QC, there is only one solution. Because so we want a solution with only one cut, no zeros, constant asymptotics, and it's given through Cauchy kernel in this form. And there is a term that also depends on this k of v. And so from this, if we reconstruct these dressing phases, we find this this solution. And now if we think that this should really be an S-matrix should satisfy Braidian unitarity. And this is like a trick, cheating a bit to fix what is k of v. So there is only one choice for k of v, which will guarantee Braidian unitarity. Or in other words, it will guarantee crossing in the two variables, not just the first one. And if we plug this value, we find this prediction for these resting phases, which agrees with this most recent proposal. And OK, so one comment is that in principle, K of V is computable, but even if we look at it as an ambiguity, it's not the same as a CDD ambiguity, because here it would be a choice between having an object that is not an S-matrix at all, but if it is a good S-matrix, it has to be this one, which Alessandro proposed. Okay, so now I want to describe, tell you a bit about some work that so far so good, but we need to do the hard work and try to solve the equations. And this is work we are doing with Simon, Kolya, and Paul. And so this is surprisingly hard in this case, because of this new feature of the non-quadratic cut. So I will to tell you a bit about why the previous methods cannot be applied straightforwardly. So in a nutshell, the idea of a previous method to solve the quantum spectral curve was to first find a solution of the Q system in terms of some parameters. And then we impose these glue-in relations, which involve us going to the cut and looking what happens on both sides. And imposing this equation will fix these parameters to some discrete set of solutions. And the parametrization that was extremely useful, both in the finite coupling method, but also it's essentially underlies the weak coupling method, is this parametrization is a Lorentz series in the Zhukovsky variables for the p functions. And this was very useful because it allowed you to cover this cut very precisely. So this is a parametrization that will converge on the full first sheet and on part of the second sheet as well. But now, because these cuts are non-quadratic, they are not resolved by these Zhukovsky variables, so this particular parametrization will crash and it will not allow us to look in detail at the first cut. So we need to develop new methods, and this is what we are doing. I just want to show some preliminary findings. So the findings is that we have good evidence, and we find that these equations are not just empty mathematical equations, but they really have solutions. We find evidence of discrete solutions, and for example, this is an example of a plot of a scaling dimension for a state, which, it has the same quantum numbers as the state defined in the ABA in this way. And in the region which we covered, we can do some fits at weak coupling with good precision already. I want to say this is, so it's still work in progress because there are still challenges. It seems quite harder than in previous cases to go towards strong coupling. So maybe we don't have the optimal method yet and we're working on it. But it seems encouraging. And with the ability to do numerics, in principle, we can think of do some tests and check if the states with massless roots are here or not. So to conclude, we have a concrete proposal for this quantum spectral curve in this case. And we should, of course, test it more and to be fully confident. At the moment, it doesn't look impossible that it already covers everything, including the massless modes. And of course, it would be nice to derive it from TBA. It would make us fully confident. And preliminarily, the numerics seems encouraging. Once we had it, in principle, we could try to test conjectures for what is the dual CFT. So there are some conjectures, they look very abstract, but in principle, if one can find a way to do computations with these proposals, one can try to do some tests. And of course, it would be interesting to use this, of course, to explore the properties of this CFT, the physical properties. And for this, it would be really nice to develop in parallel conformal bootstrap approach. So we've seen that these two, so integrability and conformal bootstrap can give quite good results when working together. I think there isn't much developed in trying to bootstrap the CFT in the way of conformal bootstrap, and I think this would be very interesting to develop. And then, of course, if this works, we can ask about other models. So this ADS3 world should have a lot of different theories. And it's almost sure that in the other cases, we will need more drastic changes of the analytic properties. It would be nice to know, to learn what are the rules, what are the possibilities. what's the minimal information we need to know about a model to understand what should be the analytic properties of the Q functions. Well, another question that's still open is what is this coupling that parameterizes the position of the branch points in terms of the physical parameters of the theory. This should be some dressed coupling like in ABJM theory, where it was fixed, so it's a challenge to fix it in this theory as well. It could be interesting to look at what survives of the QSC in this NSNS point, which is essentially solved. And maybe this could be useful to look at formalisms for correlation functions. And another world which would be interesting to explore is sigma models based on ideas too, which also are interval. Okay, thank you very much for listening.
Questions?
Thank you. Thanks, very nice construction. Can you go to the one of the very first transparencies, I'm sorry, where you have the gluing rules?
The gluing, the colored one, like this one?
Yes, yes, here. So you construct here these gluing rules through the matrices G, A, B, etc. As far as I remember, in quantum spectral curve for n equals 4 Young-Mills, you have a simpler formulation of these rules. You simply have complex conjugate just for Qs with long cut. You simply complex conjugate, say, Q2, and you get Q4 with some coefficient maybe. This is essentially the only rule which you need. Here, why do you need to do this more complicated matrix? Do you need it really? Can you formulate like just
so
simple?
We think this matrix is it's exactly off diagonal, so it depends on actually only one parameter. So it will be 0 alpha 1 over alpha
but
0.
It's just complex conjugate.
Okay, yeah. In the case of real coupling, these different arrows are just complex conjugate. But
so it's as simple as for n equals 4.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. But in principle, you might want to explore taking the coupling or the spin complex. And in this case, to define them, you need to look at the Q system and solve it from two different directions. But so if you lose reality in some way, you need this more general one. Otherwise, it's the complex conjugate.
And the second question is a bit philosophical. I'm sorry, maybe you will have no answer on it. But we have now a few systems, like a few quantum spectral curves for at least three of them. And there is this more or less general way how to construct them. You build the Hasse diagram, you impose a couple of functions equal to one, and then you pick up the nearest neighbors to these functions on the Hasse diagram and fix some asymptotics and analytic properties, and that is everything. What breaks if you take other groups? I mean, did you think about it? I was asked by Sergio Ferrara on one talk, but can you use this construction to find other theories, other supersymmetric Young-Mills theories? What will break?
It could, well, so I don't know. It could be that we find more nonlinear sigma models in this way that are integrable, and that would be the dream, that it's a way to classify. I think we don't, I mean, we can decide the rules and try to play it by these rules. Maybe we don't know yet if we want to find some specific class of models with what rules we should take.
Or we understand that these through three cases are unique and we have nothing else.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, of course. It could be that you write some equations, but then they're empty, and numerically you don't find solution.
Thank you.
Thank you for the very nice talk. So I wanted to ask you a bit the dressing factor. So if you could go back to the slide where you were discussing this. Yeah. So in the paper where you originally proposed the quantum spectral curve, you were saying that it would reproduce the old dressing factors. So now, just to clarify, is this the same quantum spectral curve as that paper? Or it was just that claim was not quite correct?
Yeah, the claim was not quite in the sense that in that paper we were happy with reproducing the crossing equations, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of trusted the previous proposal for the solution in saying we reproduce it. But we didn't actually solve the equations then.
And now if we can go back to the slide where you have the solution. So basically you have this discontinuity or this monodromy equation.
That one, right?
Yeah. And basically you are saying that this equation has a unique solution once you make certain assumptions on the poles and the discontinuities. But I guess that's always true, right? I mean, the point is, are these assumptions, are you absolutely sure that there is no wiggle room in these assumptions? Because even from the S matrix, if I say, there are no poles in the physical strip and the fall-off conditions are so-and-so and there are no branch cuts, then I will be able to find a certain solution, right, of a discontinuity equation. So how much wiggle room do you have for this solution?
For the solution, following from the rules I set at the beginning, mm-hmm. there is no more room, no more wiggle room here. Then in our construction, we could ask, what could we deform? Mm-hmm. Maybe one point is this thing,
mm-hmm.
but I don't see much. Well, of course, we could say the position of the casts it's different, or they should have some other singularities. But
one last quick question. So there are in this model not only there are massless modes, but there are two massless representations, which are distinguished by some other quantum number. Do you see some sign of the fact that there are two rather than one set of massless modes, or not yet?
No, but we haven't looked much in detail at massless modes, so I don't have an answer.
Just one question. Have you or anybody you know actually tried this method on an ADS-7? I mean, it doesn't seem to be so important what model it actually is. You can just use this methodology, and that's, I mean, there's also something interesting in duality space, right? Some duality in this mysterious six-dimensional theories.
Uh-huh. What would be the super conformal algebra in that?
Some 1,0 theories, these mysterious things where also nobody really knows how to write them down, but that doesn't seem to be a problem for this approach, right? Mm-hmm. But you have, I mean...
No. I don't know if anyone has tried.
I think there were some statements by Linus Wolf that the ADS sigma models don't make, cannot be integrable or something, but anyway, thanks.
Any other questions? If no, thank the speaker again.